Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Today, we continue down our 25-year reliving of Ravens history. And today, we're going to talk about a couple of free agent wide receivers. Actually, not a free agent. One is a free agent. The other was acquired actually by trade. But here to do that with me is Alan Frankel. Alan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. How about you?
Life's good. I run into you on Twitter, and I now interact with you fairly regularly in terms of having a voice on the Ravens. It's interesting to see in person for the first time and get to talk football a little bit with this one of these 25 years pods. So let's set the stage a little bit on where the Ravens were with receivers. And so they had good receivers in the early years with Derek Alexander and Michael Jackson, matched up with Testaverde. Then they really had quite a dark period.
Yeah, no, when you think about the receivers, you think about Travis Taylor, and really the player that comes to mind when you think of them is you really think of Todd Heap, who was the tight end, and all the Heap chants that went on through the stadium through all those years. And, you know, Travis Taylor didn't have the impact they expected. Mark Clayton also didn't have the impact that they expected. It's just a list, you know, Marcus Robinson, just a list of guys that just really paled in comparison to their one tight end, which is pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they did. Frank Sanders was another wide receiver they went out and paid some money for, and that didn't work out either. Marcus Robinson had one big game for the Ravens. They tried other players. Demetrius Williams, a kind of a deep threat that they got in the 2003 draft. They had others, but Brandon Stokely, Patrick Johnson did not work out. A second round pick that was kind of a high cost failure. We certainly had some more recent well-known failures in the way of Breshad Perriman, but the acquisition of Derek Mason in 2005 for the Tennessee Titans was kind of a turning point at wide receiver for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about his first years there with Kyle Bowler, and you know, he played well for us. He had had a good season under him. But when I think about Mason, I think about how fortunate Joe Flacco was to come onto a team that already had Derek Mason. And it's something which, when you look at, you know, the other quarterbacks that played for the Ravens, maybe things could have gone a little differently if they had a veteran, a guy like Derek Mason there, who just experienced, could get open. You can rely on him on third down type of plays, clutch situations. He must have been a huge boost just for Flacco's transition and really getting a foothold in the league.
Very much. Mason was a guy that had a couple of routes he really ran. He didn't run a lot of in the middle of the field, but he ran a little 10-yard hitch on the outside where he would come back for that back shoulder throw. And that was something immediately that Flacco and he had great timing on, getting that back shoulder throw. So it was on the way even before Mason came out of his break and was almost indefensible.
Yeah, that route is one that I actually played quarterback for a very long time. And one thing that's really important is that your receiver understands when the corner is starting to take his steps back, that momentum, kind of that first flip of the hips. And Mason seemed to have a real natural knack for knowing that moment. And Flacco could really, really bank on him even late in a play. If it was a deep comeback, he could bank on that being open and look somewhere else first, and then always be able to go back to Derek on that specific route in question. And what's interesting about Mason is that he started out, he had some returns. He used to be a return guy in the old AFC Central. Mm-hmm. He played against us a whole bunch. And he, all sorts of routes. I mean, he doesn't run a ton over the middle, but there's a few, you know, scores on like bang eight type of slants and short, I guess you call them a skinny post. But really it's the stop routes that were his bread and butter, little quick outs, outbreaking stop routes. That type of route was really really the go-to play for the Ravens a lot on third down. When they needed it most, for sure, and throughout the Flacco era in general.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people maybe don't realize this about Derek Mason, but he had 8 1,000-yard seasons in a long career, frankly, a career that lasted, 16 years, I guess, in the NFL? Or maybe it was 15. Yeah, it looks like it was 15 years. Played the game until he was 37 years old.
Yeah, he was around for really just for a very long time. And really everywhere he went, you saw his impact. I mean, with Tennessee, he started out there for 4 years. By year five, he's pretty much a consistent 1,000-yard receiver until about 2010. So we're talking 2001 to 2010. He's pretty much over 1,000 yards every year.
Yeah. In fact, he never was lower than 750 during that entire time. And that's very hard to do, folks. That's to get, you know, basically average 50 yards a game or more every single season is a remarkable set. Never had the really gaudy yards per target numbers, but in his first two big years at Tennessee in 2000, 2001, he was over 10 yards per target, which is something I definitely look for. His Ravens years were never as good. His topped out in his Ravens years at 8.6. in the first Flacco year in 2008. So, you know, a good player with the Ravens, a great player with Tennessee, frankly, when he was there. He certainly was there to solidify that offense for the Ravens in 2008 that had other things they did well. They had a great offensive line on that team. They had Todd Heap. They had a running game with three different running backs who were providing the same sort of running game that they probably had, you know, in 19 and 20 to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's the year with the Dallas game, right?
Yep.
With those three guys. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that game in particular is, to me, the singular Derek Mason game. When I think about the plays that I remember from Mason, you know, it's the touchdown in the end zone against Dallas. It's the Tennessee touchdown. A couple others come to mind, but those are the two big ones. And the reason why the Dallas game, to me, is the number one Mason highlight is because it shows what kind of a player he was, what kind of players the Ravens bring in free agency. And I'm not going to go on a whole Odell Beckham tangent, but I have a lot of friends that are Browns fans, so I watch a lot of Browns games. And there was a game this year against Denver where he hurts his shoulder and he's out of the game for five or six plays. It was very difficult not to contrast that with Derek Mason's one shoulder catch in the back corner of the end zone. Yep. And just think the difference between these two guys, just fantastic. It's a totally different world.
Yeah, Mason also fell on a fumble in that game that really saved the Ravens' bacon, and it just his recovery on that is remarkable. Some of that's right place, right time, but to recover a fumble with one arm is very difficult in an NFL pile too. If you get if that happens to you, okay. Now we move forward a little bit from the Mason acquisition to 2010, and there's actually only one overlapping year between these players, but Anquan Boldin is acquired by the Ravens. I think they acquired him for a fourth and a fifth round pick or a third and a fifth round pick. I'm trying to remember what it was. Might have been a third and a fourth, actually. But, you know, not insignificant amount of draft capital for the Ravens to give away, but they felt, I guess, that their years of attempting to draft wide receivers really hadn't worked out.
Yeah, I mean, Boldin, when you think about it, you go back to the Owens trade, which I know you did 25 years on before. Yeah. Really the physically the most talented receiver probably in Ravens history that I think that we've had throughout time. And his impact and his size and speed were immediate in how in the way that it changed the offense. Because when you have a guy like Boldin who can be a vertical threat, he can hit you in any one-on-one situation. All of a sudden, it opens things up for other guys around him. When you have that first guy who could kind of be the point man and drag double coverage and things like that. And although those weren't necessarily super explosive passing offenses, they were able to have, I would say, moments of explosivity because of Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith.
Yeah, I think the explosive component of it, I'd say I'd assign more to Torrey Smith, but Boldin, a very reliable receiver for the Ravens, very physical receiver. Some of the things he played through in Arizona in terms of having his jaw broken and whatnot and still being on the field are amazing. And then what I remember most probably about the 2012 Super Bowl run is Boldin taking the ball away from defensive backs on third and one in the Super Bowl in the back of the end zone against New England, in the back of the end zone right side against the Colts on that touchdown pass. But just play after play where basically he had a vice-like grip on the football, and that defensive back didn't dare leave his arm in there.
Yeah, so Anquan was interesting because I actually got first time we ever saw Anquan Boldin was with Jeff Blake in Arizona in the famous Ed Reed pump block game, and all I hear the whole game is Greg Gumbel saying Quan Boldin doing this, Quan Boldin doing that, the rookie Anquan Boldin, and he is just you can just see he's just kind of running a little bit roughshod through our team. And a fun little fact about Boldin and Mason, Mason played against us for years in the AFC Central. In three games against us, Anquan Boldin almost had as many yards and had actually one more touchdown in those three games. So he really was a trouble for us. And honestly, guys like him, you know, I think about, you know, when you think about young Anquan Boldin, you can get a little bit of a look of maybe a little bit like an AJ Brown kind of guy after the catch who can hurt you a little bit, not necessarily maybe the same top end speed, but just a guy who can just tough to bring down once he has the ball in his hands. And the highlights just show him kind of bouncing off guys a lot of the time.
Yeah, a good red zone target. You know, a guy who definitely would go physical at the catch point. You know, there have been a lot of pretenders in that area over the years. Michael Crabtree has been one. Dez Bryant, certainly in his tour with the Ravens, however brief, was supposed to be a catch point guy. The only guy the Ravens have really ever had who I thought was just outstanding at the catch point, or the best by far, let me say, is Anquan Boldin. It's difficult for me to imagine them getting another player who would be in that league.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those unique guys. And when I was talking a little bit more about his explosivity and one-on-one, it's that he can, if he's on the only guy on one part of the field, you can almost lob it up in his general direction, and he can go up and get it. So all of a sudden, you want to guard Torrey with an extra safety. Maybe you want somebody to help on the tight ends who Flacco was always targeting, and you want it to help against Rice in the flat. And then you cover all those guys, and he just throws it up to Boldin, and you're like, oh, shoot, I've got this 5'10 corner trying to go up against this physical specimen. And it's just like, what do you want us to do? That team always liked that offense because of how many different guys could make plays in space. And that was a really fun team to watch, even though I know that they weren't a super explosive and have big yardage totals, but they had a lot of guys that could really hurt you. They were a very diverse offensive attack. It was a really fun team.
Yeah, they definitely did have some weapons they could use. The 2012 team in particular, it's interesting you mentioned like going up for the ball in space. To me, it's like the space for Anquan means he's got one-on-one coverage, and it's always pretty tight. No, he was never like wide open. He did have some crossing stuff in the 11 playoff game against New England. He drove him up the field with four straight receptions to get him into Lee Evans territory and Billy Cundiff territory. But it was most of the time, or a lot of the time anyway, it was Boldin. He either had to pick his way free, or pick a rub meaning, or he would maybe get through free on an extended play in the end zone sometimes. But a lot of times he was just throwing up the ball in single coverage, and he had to go up and get the football. That led to a catch rate that I think people will look at years from now and say, it's not a particularly good catch rate, but it really was most of his catches were contested.
Yeah. I enjoy stats. I work as an analyst. I look at stats all day, but one thing that I always kind of try to keep track of is the context. And with Boldin, like you said, it's a lot of catches, but the thing that really struck to me about Anquan Boldin, it's something I've looked for in receivers when guys come up. That's why I mentioned AJ Brown, shoulder width. Shoulder, mm-hmm. If you have wide shoulders, it gives you immediate separation on any outbreak or box out sort of style play. Yep. It was something like, even if you have a guy who's 5'10", if you got those big wide shoulders over the shoulder, you create a lot of space laterally for the ball to drop into. And on the sides, on corner routes, fades, any sort of time where you're between you, only person is you and the sideline, or any sort of boundary, you give yourself an advantage. And when I think of Boldin, I think of a lot of plays towards a boundary. I think of a back boundary play over the middle in the end zone, you know, the touchdowns against San Francisco and New England and even Kansas City earlier. I saw it again in a highlight package. So you think about, when you think Boldin, I just think boundary. All plays that are by the boundary, he has a big advantage.
Yeah, it's a shoulder width is a good measure. Arm length also helps a receiver in that case who's going up for the football. But this is a key thing for cornerbacks too. And we love Chris Westry now because he's got fabulously long arms, and the Ravens have typically liked those aircraft carrier corners. Sean Wade had this too, by the way. And I was kind of sick that they traded him away. But what that allows you to do is when you're in tight coverage with a receiver, could get your hand in an extra 2 inches into the body, or an extra inch and a half into the receiver's body. Very significant advantage. All of the rules favor the offensive player in terms of not having that contact made early. So the defender has to be careful still about just being close and not being, on his back. But the extra arm length really matters. And in the same sense, just, you know, conversely, that shoulder width, gives a big body tight end, a Kelce or Andrews even, or other players who are wide-shouldered like Boldin, an opportunity to defend that and box it out. So both characteristics worth looking at.
Yeah, well, Wester's now really looking forward to seeing him in some cover threes. Sure, he profiles a great outside cover three guy. But also, like, when I see, like, Bolden and Mason kind of tying those two guys together, you see just a lot of being willing to sacrifice for the team. Bolden's got, I mean, you look at Bolden's stats, he's got 2,000-yard years in Arizona in 08 and 09, then three straight years under 1,000 yards with the Ravens, followed by two more 1,000-yard seasons. You see the catches go up in San Francisco again. The catches go up in Arizona. We're up in Arizona. They're kind of down in the middle in Baltimore. And I think it really speaks to the type of guys the Ravens try to bring in. And I think that you're starting, I think teams now are really starting to pay attention to that culture with guys, you know, always saying, I'm going to leave or this, that, and tending to social media. Mason and Bolden, just quiet cats getting things done on the field. It's hard to imagine too, you know, to think that when they were bringing in Bolden and talking about bringing him in after dealing with Owens and that type of stuff, that they saw Bolden, they're like, oh, this guy's just like Derek Mason. This is the guy we're looking for. We've had one of these before. We understand it. And you can see a consistent line of thought that goes through the Ravens organization and the type of, just the type of players that they get. When you have ownership that's stable, GM that's stable, you start to see similar profiles of guys coming onto the team with the similar levels of success. And you really could see that with Bolden and Mason, which is really why I wanted to tie them together, because they really remind me a lot of each other in spite of their separate individual play styles.
Yeah, they certainly have some similarities in that. And there have been other players since who I think don't necessarily embody the view the same way. It's Steve Smith, a guy who definitely needed to have the football. Wanted to have it more, was vocal about sometimes not having the football. Not Terrell Owens vocal, but vocal. But there were similarities on them in that he, despite his size, was, you know, one of the toughest guys on the team in terms of fighting for a football. Marshall Yonda, I remember him at the podium once and asked him, who's the guy you don't want to get in a fight with on the team? There have been some chippy practices and whatnot. And he said, I don't know, probably Steve Smith. That was funny. He got us going.
Yeah, no, Steve, the thing about Steve Smith that always was great about him was it wasn't just, he always did want the ball. He definitely was a little bit more of that type of a player, but a guy physically just laid it all out on the field in so many different ways. I always wanted his jersey, that black Carolina Panthers jersey. Those are really cool. But he really like just embodied that attitude. He was fantastic. Watching him, he just had great speed, even though when he was older, he still had like that DeSean Jackson style kind of separation in a way. Like he always seemed to be able to read the ball a little quicker. He was a really, really great receiver, different for sure than Mason and Bolden, but similar in the veteran, tough guy, physical, lay it on the field, no matter what kind of player.
All right. Other comments about Mason Bolden relative to current receivers or which you'd rather have maybe right now?
The guy I'd rather have is Bolden. If I could have one of those guys, because you pairing Bolden with Hollywood, Bolden as a blocker on this team would be tremendous. Yeah. We didn't really talk about blocking in either of these guys' cases yet, but really what separates Bolden from Mason to me and what I think made him a better player overall was his ability to be the number one guy down the field when you needed him. Although he didn't have necessarily the blazing speed when he got here, He could be my first read tier, and then I can move on. They have to account for him no matter what. I think the teams at a certain level looked at Mason and said, okay, he hurts us for 10, 12, 15 yards. Maybe if we let him one-on-one, he does beat us on some sort of stop and go, or he'll figure something out in his own late breaking, but he's not going to be the point man who's going to be like I would not consider Mason to be the point receiver in a top 10 offense. Just wouldn't.
Well, they inherited roles based on the personnel who was here at the time. You mentioned Todd Heap, but Mark Clayton is kind of a forgotten guy in this. He was still there and still getting a fair number of targets, certainly a lot of snaps. And he was a guy who really had more of a speed. When they would run the boot, he was typically the deep guy, not a shallow guy, not a crossing from the opposite side of the field guy. So, it really restricted the number of times that Bolden could go deep. And yet I remember on the first play of that 2010 season, in his first game with the Ravens, if I recall, his very first play of the season, they threw a deep pass complete to Bolden in his first play in Baltimore.
Yeah. The ball against the Jets, I think. The game that sticks out to me, obviously, with all my friends from Cleveland, was the 3-touchdown game against the Browns, where he just kind of just was all over the place.
Yeah.
And even though they had other speed targets at the time, it's that ability to play at three levels. And I really felt that he had that ability a little bit more than Mason.
Okay. All right. Well, Alan, we appreciate having you on. Tell folks again where they can follow you on Twitter.
So you can follow me on Twitter, AlanFrankel3. You can see me, I'll give Ken a plug on his own podcast here, where you'll see me tweeting a lot on Ken's Twitter. I replies to a lot of the daily updates with the Ravens. And sometimes you can catch me. There's a great YouTuber, All22. He has a YouTube. He does Ravens film breakdowns. I don't know. Have you seen this stuff, Ken?
I have not, but I'll give it a look if you send me a link.
Yeah, happy to send you a link. He's been doing some really good video breakdowns. He has a film room every Saturday night. So you can catch me commenting. I'll be in the comment section there every once in a while. He's got some great stuff.
All right. Folks, if you're out there and you want to do a 25 years episode, I still have about 8 to 10 to record now. We did a bunch today. But hit me up on Twitter. DMs are open. What your idea is, we want to narrowly focus things so we can get into some depth in 20 minutes. You heard how we talked about Bolden and Mason here. That's the kind of depth we want to get into. So it necessarily has to be a fairly narrow topic. So if you want to talk about the Ravens defense, since they were around, that's not going to work. Or Ravens Mount Rushmore is a little too hackneyed. So give us a topic that's narrow and we'll get into some real depth on it. Alan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much, Ken. It was really great being on with you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.